Today's conversation is with Madhu Puradasa, the founder of the Conscious Success Community, which is a free online community with tons of resources for you if you're looking to enhance your consciousness and uplevel your life. And my conversation with Madhu was incredibly interesting today. And really, we talked about what brought him to where he is, which is at a very young age, at the age of 18, he left his life in Southern California, moved across the world to India, became a monk, and lived in a monastery for 5 years. And in that time, was both a patient and a practitioner of Ayurvedic medicine and healing. And he has carried that knowledge and that ancient wisdom with him throughout his life, throughout his current life, where he's now helping other holistic practitioners have a greater impact with their own communities. And the place that he was versus where he is now and the level of awareness that he carries with him is something that I felt would be an honor to share with you. So I hope you enjoy this conversation, and thank you for joining me on the Becoming Superhuman podcast today. All right, Madhu, I am so excited to have you join me here today on the Becoming Superhuman podcast, and really excited for our conversation that we're about to have, because you have such a unique and really colorful history in the health and wellness space. And it's something that I'm really looking forward to hearing more about and having you expand on and just share a little bit of your experience in service and in health and in healing with everyone who's listening today.
I've been so excited for this call, Dr. Nirvani, because you are such a vibrant source of health and light. And, you know, there's so many people talking about holistic health and wellness, but it's easy to talk about it. It's another thing to actually practice it. And you are such a great example of that. And I can't wait to chat about some specific and practical takeaway tips so that people can get some of the vibrance that you share.
Oh, well, thank you. That is incredibly kind of you. And I'm really excited for it too, because I know that you have a lot to share and that I have a lot to learn. So before we dive any deeper into exactly what your practice looked like and your life as an Ayurvedic practitioner looked like, do you want to give us just a little bit of a background into your previous life, shall we say? I know you were a monk at one time, even though now you're back in the West and living a little bit of a different life. But if you wouldn't mind just going into what led you to India, what led you to becoming a monk and dedicating a portion of your life to living in that way, and what you learned through doing that.
Absolutely. Well, it's obviously unusual for someone, an 18-year-old young man, to want to leave everything behind, shave their head, become a celibate monk in India. And so it's definitely a question I get on the regular. The shorthand version is this. I had a relatively comfortable upbringing, relatively, and life was still hard. There was so much suffering, and there were so many questions I had in my mind of what is the purpose behind this? What am I even meant to do? Is it supposed to be this hard? And just a long series of questions. And what happened was, as I was on this long search to try to find, say, answers to these somewhat deep questions, I was curiously exploring all different types of traditions and practices and philosophies and theologies. And ultimately, I read one literature, which is called the Bhagavad Gita, which is for those unfamiliar with this literature, it's about 5,000-year-old book that is teaching the nature of the self and purpose. And in Sanskrit, the term is dharma. In other words, your unique purpose and contribution to life. your understanding of relationship with other living entities and what does it mean to be spiritual, etc. And so when I was 16, I read this book and it opened my eyes to what I would call like Eastern philosophy and theology, which I didn't have much experience with growing up. It was more kind of Western theology and oftentimes left me wanting more. I was like, but what else? But I want details. I want specifics. And so long story short, I started studying this ancient knowledge from India. And then before I knew it, I was like, there's something here. I want to try it. So I started visiting these temples that taught this ancient philosophy. And I thought, okay, I could either keep going the direction I am. At that point, I was 16. I was going to college for construction management and architecture, which anyway, if you know me, you'll get a good laugh out of that one. And I said I could keep doing that, or I can dedicate my life for at least a couple of years to learning how to become in control of my mind and senses. And lo and behold, on my 18th birthday, shaved my head and moved into a monastery.
Wow. So you said you had a relatively comfortable upbringing, but was there anything that, I mean, even at the age of 16, 17, 18, that's still really young to have such a profound and intense interest in consciousness and spirituality and personal development. Like, all of those things are not necessarily what most 16 or 17-year-olds are up to. So was there anything that in your earlier life you believe might have kind of set you on that path?
Yeah, most certainly. Well, the first big bump in life that really shook me to my core was when I was 8 years old, I lost a sister and her husband. They were hit by a drunk driver in a car accident. This is when I was 8. And they had 2 children. And so the 2 children were not in the car when they were hit. But yeah, my sister Sita and her husband, they died in a car accident. And it was the first time I was really faced with death. And I thought to myself, well, this sucks. Like, someone's just here and now they're gone and there's nothing I can do about it. And so that's where I really started to become curious. Like, so what does it mean to die? Like, what is death of the body? Like, and there's a way in which I could experience like, okay, my sister's no longer here. And I remember seeing like, okay, there's a part of her, like her body is still here, but she is no longer here. And that's where I started to first contemplate the idea of consciousness. Okay, we are not the body. We have a body. You know, the body changes every 7 years, every single cell of the body is regenerated. So we're taking on new carne every 7 years. We're reincarnating, you know, another way to say that. So what does that even mean? Like, what does it mean to be a soul, self, spirit, unit of consciousness? What does it mean to have a body? What's the differences, etc.? And dealing with other death as I aged, grandmother, and anyway, the list goes on. We're all always surrounded by inevitable deaths around us. That curiosity continued to unfold. And just innate, my parents raised, I'm the youngest of 7. They raised 7 children. So I have nothing but love for them. And by the time I was a young man, they had understandably checked out in certain ways. And so I very independent, became maybe too competent for my age, if that makes sense. And so, yeah, through these different experiences and being very independent, I was like, I don't want to just live a life I don't want to live and then die and have nothing to say for it. So what the heck am I meant to be doing in this life? And I mean, there's more to it, of course, but that was really one of the core things that shifted my mindset, understanding life and understanding death.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I'm, you know, sorry to hear what happened with your sister, but it had an impact on you in a really meaningful and profound way where, you know, you've transmuted some of that pain and been able to do some really incredible things in your life. And in that, while you were living as a monk and you were living in India, what are some lessons that you think you learned there that you've sort of taken with you throughout your life? And did you find that fulfillment of purpose while you were there? Or is that something that is ongoing for you as you, you know, continue to live your life the way you are now?
Yeah, there's what nice questions. You know, there's two big takeaways. I mean, there's maybe 2,000 others, but there's two big takeaways after spending 5 years in the monastery. And honestly, these two takeaways didn't really come until I actually graduated the monastery. But I would say service and sense control. And what that means is happiness comes from service. There's a way in which the mind is always trying to convince us, once I get this, then I'll be happy. And once I achieve that, and once I experience this, and there's a way in which we think, when I get, then I'll be happy. But rather, happiness comes from a sense of service. Now, I mean, you're such a great example of this because so many years were, you know, within your practice, helping so many others. And really it comes down to, how do I improve the quality of life of other individuals? And that's really where satisfaction comes. Whereas, again, the material mind says, me, me, me. But rather we want to retrain the brain to orient it around that which will actually provide satisfaction, happiness, purpose, contentment. And that is really being a contributor instead of a taker in this world. Because the mind has to be trained to not be a taker by nature. It's just give, 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 take, 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 take. But rather we want to retrain the brain, give, 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 give. And I mean, so many people experience this. That's why I have friends who are, you know, multimillionaires, even in one case a billionaire. And why do they in their free time engage in philanthropic acts and you know, acts of charity and go out of their way to do it? Because they know that the things don't actually make them happy. But rather, when they have the time, they want to go and give back, because that's really where satisfaction comes from. So service is one pillar. The other one is sense control. When we're talking about senses, controlling what I might call the six senses, the mind being the sixth, and then we have, you know, the sight, smell, taste, touch, hearing, etc. To the extent that we can learn to control these senses, they do not control us. Whereas if we allow them to go, God, we all know what happens when we follow the mind. The mind says, just one more cupcake. You've only had 12. You know, just one more cupcake. At least that's what my mind says. And learning to say, you know, I am not willing to just be controlled by the mind, but rather I am going to act in this world in ways to control the mind. Because if I can control my mind, I can control my future and in terms of my destiny. So learning how to become service-oriented as well as not being just dragged by the senses. The eyes see something nice. Oh, I got to watch. You know, oh, I got to try. I got to taste that. I got to touch that. But rather saying, no, I'm going to be very diligent and I'm only going to let my mind focus on things I want it to focus on. Eat the things I actually want to be eating. See the things I actually want to see. Hear the sounds I actually want to be hearing, etc. So those are two big topics. But ultimately, what that does is that leads one to purpose, which is to your wonderful second question. Is it something that, okay, we just find our purpose, now we're done? Maybe, but I have a different perspective, which you alluded to so nicely, is it's something we always come back to. And it's something that there's always space to be refined, as we have as much clarity as we can around our purpose. But it's something that there's always room for improvement, because we're always improving, or at least we have the opportunity to be improving and refining and understanding ourselves deeper. And therefore, even though, say, the essence of our service and our purpose might not change, the consciousness and awareness we have around that might deepen. Well, I would say we hope for it to continue to deepen. So finding our purpose is something that is maybe the main focus of becoming a monk around, and that we try to serve and help others with finding, but it's something to always come back to, where there's always room for further clarity and further understanding.
And during your time as a monk, like from a very practical place, what were some things you were practicing, or what did aspects of your day look like so that you could develop this sense of service to others, develop a sense of control over your senses? What does that look like in the life of a monk?
Yeah, very practically. So ultimately, everything comes down to practices that do those two things. And so an example might be, we would wake up, say, 3:34 in the morning. And then from there, we would do some congregational meditation. And then we'd have about 2 hours for individual meditation. And after that, we would have lots of education classes, really trying to learn, trying to consume as much knowledge as possible. And then, after breakfast, we would then, and even in breakfast, it's not like you're eating everything, it's high quality, organic, freshly cooked meals. And then from there, you spend the rest of the day serving. And then everyone's engaged according to their psychophysical nature. So an example is some monks, they love to cook. And therefore, they would cook for us as well as for, we have a lot of charitable events where we're, feeding many other people or, bringing food for different events, whatever the case might be. Whereas, say, for myself, you're getting to know with, through our relationship is, I can talk and talk and talk and talk. And I like to teach. I like to consume knowledge and share that with others. So I would go to universities and teach students, and we would have, meditation sessions and all that. And so everyone's engaged in service according to their nature. And so from, let's say, after breakfast until midday, where we'll have some more studies, maybe some more meditation in the evening, and then we go to bed. So the whole day is based around learning how to control the senses and be disciplined around it. And we don't want too much discipline. We don't want it to where you become hard-hearted and, we want it militant enough, as we like to say, where you're working with the senses, but not pushing them to the point of breaking your mind. But then the other part of the day is service. Yeah. How can I improve the quality of life of other individuals with the types of practices that we're learning?
Honestly, hearing you describe that makes me want to go spend some time becoming a monk.
We were just talking about you coming to India with us next year. We won't wake you up at 4, but.
Well, I think that would definitely be a nice introduction to it for sure. But the idea that, you have this very dedicated amount of time, and for you, it was a long time. 5 years is a long time. But I think almost everybody, whether they choose to actually do it or not, could use some aspect of that training, like that development of discipline, development of personal responsibility, and then taking those things and taking the strength that you develop within yourself when you make those things a priority in your life and sharing that with the world in a way that's really unique to you. And, that's a gift and something that we, especially I would say in our Western culture, we don't really focus on almost at all. Like, it's really a go, 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 go kind of a life, and prioritizing your own ability to discipline yourself and develop a fortitude of your mind and of your body and of your intentions, we could probably spend a lot more time focusing on those types of things, which it sounds like is something you had a really beautiful opportunity to do while you were living as a monk. So thank you for sharing that, because that was actually very cool and inspiring from my perspective. It made, the idea of becoming a monk sound just really special, really cool.
Less strange and abnormal. Yeah, I mean, well said. As you have such a way of expressing these ideas clearly, and yeah, discipline is actually awesome. In the mind, usually it was like, discipline. Yeah. But the idea is discipline really just means the practice of learning how to control the mind so it doesn't control us. Because gosh, we all know what happens when we just let the mind take us in these directions. And I mean, the most heinous things we ever heard of in our life are people not controlling their mind and senses, doing things that are just abominable, and therefore falling in love with discipline. And after graduating the monastery, one of the whole purposes is to help people become disciplined, learning these principles, even if that just means starting with meditating 1 minute a day. Who meditates for even a minute a day? That's a huge accomplishment. And then from there, just building it up. So anyway, well said.
Yeah, I heard this quote once. I don't know who said it, but I think it's a nice thing to think about. And it was, discipline is freedom, which is something that, those two things, like that sounds almost like an oxymoron, but it It truly is, because when you develop that practice of discipline, it opens up parts of yourself that you don't access when you're really scattered, or, you know, you're energetically, mentally, emotionally, physically all over the place. Like, there really is a new depth to your own self that you access in your discipline. So I think it's a really cool thing to contemplate in a practice that I'm really glad you shared your experience and how you were able to develop it. And I think would be nice if more people were able to adopt that same, at least perspective, that developing discipline and honing it within yourself is an important life skill.
I love that. Yeah.
And so at what point did you get into Ayurvedic medicine, just to switch gears a little bit, and start practicing Ayurvedic medicine with people around you?
Yeah, it was actually while I was a monk. And for those who are familiar with the term Ayurveda, so in Sanskrit, it literally means Ayur is the quality of life, and Veda is the study of. So it's the world's oldest written down holistic science that we currently know of, which in my mind I discredit. I was like, it's old woo-woo practices, holistic stuff. Now, I'm very grateful for it, of course. But what happened was, when I was a monk, without getting onto all the gross details, I got really sick and lost a lot of weight, you know, lost 25 plus pounds. And I was going to allopathic doctors and wasn't getting much information on what the root issue was. And so after trying to get to the bottom of my, you know, I just kept losing weight. I had no digestion and I was like never hungry. And my, let's just say, the body was not doing the things it should have been doing naturally. I was really freaking out. And all of the advice I was getting from an allopathic approach was just addressing the symptoms. Like, okay, if you're not hungry, here's how to get a little hungrier. If you have a headache, all right, just take this to take the headache away. And it was addressing the symptoms. And after months of doing this, this is really all I knew growing up. All right, you got a headache, you take a pill. I realized, like, this sucks. I'm just addressing the symptom, but like, we're not fixing the problem. And a friend was like, oh, you got to go to an Ayurvedic doctor nearby. And I'll connect you with this person. I was like, what am I going to have to do? I'm going to have to like eat soup and but I mean, I'm being a little dramatic. Because I was a monk, I was actually a little more receptive, but I was still like doubtful. Is this holistic? Is this really going to work? And I'm grateful to say that in the first session, pretty much they looked at my eyes, looked at my tongue, read my pulse, and I didn't say anything. She hardly spoke like English. And, then she told me all the things that were wrong with me. And she was like, oh, you must be experiencing X, Y, Z. And I was like, and I remember I turned to my friend, I was like, you told her? He's like, I didn't tell her anything. And I was like, how would you know that? And she's like, you know, kind of explaining and through translation, explaining what's going on. And I realized, okay, there's something. Like, this is insane. How does this person understand all the things that are wrong? And then, we're talking about in about 15 minutes, 15, 20 minutes, it was like, oh, these are all the things that are happening in your body. This is how we fix it. And I was like, well, that makes perfect sense. And, you know, and like, just, I mean, frankly, it was in a matter of maybe 2 minutes of her actually telling me what the issue was. It was just an immediate awakening of like, oh, that makes perfect sense. Now I know what to do. And it was a long process, but ultimately, a holistic process of rebuilding my body, rebuilding my microbiome in my gut, and fixing some of the issues that opened my eyes to say, okay, this works. You know, I can't doubt it anymore because I am the recipient of the actual results. And then from there, I said, you know, I want to learn this so I can provide someone else this life transformation as well. And that's when I started studying very diligently Ayurveda. And then when I graduated from being a monk, that's when I actually started to share on more of a big basis, like really trying to teach it and take it to others and help them improve their quality of life as well.
And for anyone who's not necessarily familiar with some of the principles in Ayurveda, do you mind just going into that? And as an example, you mentioned your experience with allopathic medicine. How exactly, aside from maybe sounding a little woo-woo, how exactly does Ayurveda differ from allopathic medicine, and why is there a potential for it to be so much more powerful?
Yeah, I love this question, and I want to preface by saying, especially somebody, you know, I work with a lot of doctors, some allopathic, mostly holistic, but, you know, some of them are MDs that also practice holistic healing. And so sometimes I might, for the sake of being dramatic, say, go big, you know, allopathic versus Ayurveda. But one thing I like to share is I'm so happy that I'm seeing in the current around the world is a lot of allopathic practitioners are integrating holistic practice as well, which is just really exciting. And what I'll talk about some of the differentiation is really we're talking about the holistic approach of Ayurveda or traditional Chinese medicine or many other holistic practices. What we're talking about is trying to, number one, understand the root cause of all the problems as opposed to the symptoms and fix things from that basis first. Now, it doesn't mean we don't also address symptoms. We do. We do. No need to unnecessarily walk around with a headache all day or whatever the problem might be. But most importantly is attacking things from the root cause itself and understanding how to overcome that through primarily diet and lifestyle. And that's everything from fixing our sleep and circadian rhythms and different aspects of biorhythms and exercise and how to actually eat according to your body type. And there's not just a one size fits all. It's not like everyone should take this and this is good for everyone. No, if your body is imbalanced this way, then this is helpful. If your body is opposite imbalance, and this thing can be harmful. Whereas sometimes in the West, there's good or bad. It's okay, spinach is good. No, actually, spinach is not good. It's a toxin. Actually, spinach is a superfood if it's cooked. And there's a way in which it's like, depending on the new study that come out, this thing's good or bad. But rather, Ayurveda takes a different perspective and say, okay, if this is good or bad according to your unique situation. So for you, no spinach. For you, cooked spinach. For you, raw spinach. And in this way, everything is looked at according to addressing an individual's imbalance as opposed to general good or bad. And with that, you know, if I get in a car accident, I'm definitely going to go to modern medicine in the hospital. Sure. That's for darn sure. But, you know, if I want to fix my common cold as efficiently as possible at the root cause, I'm going to go holistic. So I love both of them as long as we're using them at the appropriate time. That's usually how I present it.
Right. Yeah, that's such an important distinction. I think, you know, to not write either one of these modalities off. And I think what, you know, allopathic medicine is really good at is dealing with, you know, emergent care, trauma-based care, things that require acute pain management or acute trauma management, like things that require immediate attention, immediate life-saving techniques or science, or a combination of all of that. Because as you said, if I got into a car accident as well, I'm headed to an ED. But I think where allopathic practice misses the mark is in chronic care, chronic disease management. And I think a lot of that comes from not necessarily going to the root cause and staying a little bit superficial and symptom-based. And so that's why I think there is now, it seems like, almost this resurgence in an interest in more holistic practices or ancient ideas, you know, whether it's Ayurveda or you mentioned traditional Chinese medicine, these practices that hold so much wisdom and time, like they've been around for thousands of years and millions of people, if not billions, over the, you know, the generations that they've been around have been using them successfully. And there is something to that. Like there's something in that. And I think for you to have the experience of growing up in the US, going to India, being very much, you know, aware of and familiar with conventional medicine, and then getting an introduction to Ayurveda and, you know, the power that's held in that practice is a really unique perspective to just share with anyone, and to show the power of the wisdom that exists within this type of approach to medicine. And I guess I don't so much have a question in that, but just to say that I agree with the perspective that there's a place for both. But in my experience, both as a practitioner, but also as a quote unquote patient, like as somebody who has had things wrong that I wanted dealt with, I can see that there's much more of a utility for these types of ancient ideas when you're dealing with something chronically, because you really do need to get to the root of what caused this, like the headaches, the coughing, the pain, the brain fog, the inflammation. All of that comes from somewhere and comes from something. And you mentioned just a little bit earlier the idea that Ayurveda really takes the unique individual into consideration. And, you know, you gave the example of spinach, which I loved, because it's so true. Like the idea that there is any one size fits all anything across the board for people is just not based, like that's not a real thing. That's not true. You know, there's an art to medicine just as much as there is a science. And part of that is really gaining a sense of, you know, who this person is in front of you and how something, you know, cooked, raw, steamed, boiled, any of those ideas could help this person. And I think that you've spent so much time as a practitioner being able to hone that skill for people, that almost gets translated into how you can help them in other ways.
I really like how you present that. And yeah, there's a way in which there's this term in Ayurveda where they say things aren't good or bad. They're either aggravating or pacifying. In other words, it's either pacifying the symptoms or the problem, or it's aggravating, it's making it worse. And therefore, yeah, taking such a personalized approach, because no one likes feeling like a number anyway. It's like, all right, you have this, here, take this generic medicine. It's like, I don't want to take it. I want to take something that's going to heal this darn issue and heal it effectively according to my unique situation. Yeah, that was one thing that really stood out for me is it's so nice to feel, we all want to feel like we're getting a personalized approach anyway. And that's the whole direction of Ayurveda and many of these other holistic sciences that I've gotten to study over the years is how do we address something for the individual themselves? And in such a way as the cool thing about being an Ayurvedic practitioner, which has kind of informed my current career where I, you know, obviously as you know this, but like with marketing and helping people is we want to work ourselves out of a job. It's like, A lot of big pharma, I mean, I'm not going to get so much in this, but like, there's a way in which if we heal the problem, who's going to be buying all these medicines for spends we're making so much money with? And with Ayurveda, it's like, yeah, the whole desire is I'm trying to work myself out of a job here. I want to get people so healthy and knowledgeable that they're good to go without me. And there's a service mentality that, you know, bringing the service back in it that must be involved. And, you know, in the same way with like our helping all of our holistic clients who are doing this now with marketing, same thing. It's like, we want to just get you familiar enough with how to do it. So you're like good to go. You're not dependent. And I think that's like one of the biggest mindset shifts that some of these holistic practices offer. It's like, we want to become autonomous and knowledgeable and like good to go on our own. So we're not dependent on having to go to the doctor every 6 months or another check up on what medicines I'm taking every day. Like, I want to get to the point where I'm not taking medicines every day. Anyway, more to be shared on that, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's a market for everything and there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. But I think we're now in a place where there are like many people are stuck in a spin of being perpetually propelled by a market and perhaps an industry versus what is actually best for them. And, you know, we don't need to go into necessarily too many of the details around some of what that may be, but there are these large industries that have an interest in people coming back as customers, and sometimes they're called patients. And if we can move into a place where we are able to understand our bodies better, are able to take responsibility for what happens to us, that's so much more empowering and, you know, so much more of a beautiful way to approach your life here than to kind of be pushed around by a system that is really just looking at you as though you're a number.
A cash cow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just can't help but share that that was why we started our, I mean, anyway, obviously you know, within our work together, but the reason I started Marine Agent, never in my life, especially from being a monk and like helping people heal, did I ever think, you know, I'm going to create a holistic marketing agency, but it's because of this. I saw so much manipulation and exploitation in like the whole aspect of marketing. And I saw so many of my friends who were like, anyway, don't want to criticize anyone, but like friends who were getting, let's just say, not treated properly and, you know, getting just squeezed this way or that way. And I was like, no, you know, there's a way to do this consciously. There's a way to help others and, again, work your way out of a job, but still make good money doing it. And that, like, that was what you just said so eloquently, is like the premise of kind of my life of doing what we do is creating those opportunities, because that's all we want. All we want is just a good support system that's going to help us live the way we want holistically to improve our quality of life. And that's one thing I appreciate about you too, is you do that so well within your, how many years of practice now?
14 in a couple of months.
Amazing. I mean, no one can do what you're doing for 14 years without that level of integrity and conscientiousness around the practice. And, you know, the best way to infiltrate the minds and influence the masses is becoming the example. And anyway, one thing I've gotten to appreciate about getting to know you have these last few months is you are the example of like health practices and actually showing up and doing the work so that others see, oh, okay, well, I want to be like Dr. Nirvani when I grew up or whatever it might be. And, you know, they see you actually doing these practices, which I think is the foundation. And that's what, like, that's what actually changes and influences other people when they see someone like you doing it. So anyway, that's just a long appreciation for you showing up and actually being the example people need to see.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I think for me, I truly believe, and the name of this podcast is Becoming Superhuman, but I truly believe we all have so much power and potential that really, for a large majority of people, remains untapped. And it's not because it's not there, but it's like this dormant chest that hasn't been opened up. It hasn't been unlocked within us. And I think for me, being able to access those parts of myself, and then in doing that, truly, I can see where they lie in other people, whether they choose to, you know, to activate them or not. But I think, as you said, being an example, or at least tapping into that part of yourself that does allow you to feel as though you're pushing your limits, or you're pushing even the limits of, you know, what is conventionally thought as possible, is like, there's a kind of a playfulness to that that allows you to not only build strength and discipline that we talked about earlier, but truly build your body, like from a very physical perspective, build your body and build your mind into this like completely fortified temple that could not be knocked down. Like, there's no way that anything could take this temple you've built out. And I think honoring our bodies in that way and treating them truly like this temple that we wake up in every single day is a nice way to treat ourselves, to treat this body that we've been gifted with our time here.
Yeah, I couldn't say it any better myself. I mean, even from a statistics standpoint, it's really miraculous to become a human. And, you know, there's so many endless trillions, if not more, for sure more than trillions of living entities around the world, from the squirrels and the birds to the turtles. And, you know, but what makes us unique, and not better, but unique, is that we have a prefrontal cortex where we can have conversations like this and recursive language and actually ask questions that, like, what is my purpose and what am I meant to do here? And really honoring this temple. I mean, I love this term you said, temple. It's just something that we also learn and focus a lot on while being monks, is like taking care of the body as the temple it is. It's so rare to even become a human out of all living entities. You know, there's only 8 billion, might sound like a lot, but compared to all the other living entities, we're a tiny minority. And somehow we hit the jackpot by being a human, by somehow or other we're here. Well, that's another conversation for another podcast. How do we get to being a human in the first place? But we're here now, and how to really take advantage of it, not just spoil this life and not just, you know, waste it away, but really treat this body as the temple that it is and feel gratitude every day for having a functional body and that we get to build, and building the body, building the mind, building up the person we actually want to become. And it's just such a gift. It's such a gift. I really love that emphasis that you're putting on that.
And from your perspective as somebody who was a practitioner and helping people, you know, build this gift and helping people realize the true potential in the gift of their body, do you have any examples or any ways that really stand out to you in which you saw this idea of quote unquote becoming superhuman, like this true innate divinely powered potential that is within all of us accessed in your patients?
Yeah. Well, what I'll say to preface my answer is we have a body, right? We know we're not the body because the body changes. And I'm not less of a person. If I lose a limb, I'm not less of a person, right? We can understand very empirically that we have a body, but we're not a body. In the same way, we can understand we have a mind, but we're not our mind, because we can change our mind. We can see our thoughts and we're like, I don't like that thought. Get rid of it. I like this thought. Let's keep it. And so, you know, a saying that we often come back to is, I'm not my body, I'm not my mind, I'm something divine. And so we can understand we're something beyond the body and the mind, that's spirit, soul, consciousness, whatever term we want to give for it, we're talking about the same thing. And what I would say is, when it comes to what all these practices, all these holistic practices, they get us to a point where we're, again, not being dragged by the senses, and we're actually feeling content by service, and then ultimately able to perceive and become the observer of life. Like, as opposed to being just reacting to life and as a default conditioning, you know, just going through on autopilot, is all these practices are to lead us to a place where we are now the conscious observer and decision maker. I'm the boss. I get to decide what I want to put my time, attention, resources towards. And so all these practices are to lead to that end of like full free sense of personal responsibility and control of my life, and putting myself in the driver's seat. Doesn't mean we don't depend on help of others. We of course are only here because of the kindness of our teachers and standing on the shoulders of giants, but ultimately we're the one driving the boat, and we're the one who actually gets to create the life that we want. So with that preface in mind, these practices, where I'll throw a couple out that anyone could use today, immediately after this podcast ends. Like, there's a few things that we could do to start to create that sense of radical self-responsibility and control of our life, and in terms of doing something today that will create the future that we want. And number one is, you really got to take care of the physical body, and that's everything from regulating your sleep and your eating and your, you know, all aspects of biorhythms and what you're doing in this world. Take care of the physical body, take care of the mind. And this is everything from meditation practices. Again, even if it's just 30 seconds a day, even if right after this episode ends, if you just grab our handy dandy smartphones, go to the stopwatch and click 30 seconds and say, I'm just going to focus on my breath. I'm just going to take deep breaths for 30 seconds. Like, that's a fantastic start. And, you know, work our way from there. And there's so many types of meditation practices. But then also on a spiritual level, or on a level of consciousness, is doing things to help us understand that we're not just the body. It's easy to identify with the body. Doing things to help us realize we're not just the mind. It's so easy to identify with the mind, but actually consciously saying, I am beyond these things. And doing what we might call spiritual practice. In other words, things that help us understand we're a spirit. We're beyond the physical body and the subtle mind. And engaging in things that help on all three levels. So taking care of the physical body, nourishing there, taking care of the mental and emotional body, the subtle body, if you will, and then also nourishing ourselves on the level of who we really are, or the spirit. And more I could say about that, but those are the overarching principles.
Yeah, thank you for that. Do you have any, for somebody who, for example, is listening, is wanting to access their highest physical potential and is maybe feeling overwhelmed or confused by how to access more of their consciousness, do you have any practices that you think could be really accessible? You mentioned the 30-second meditation, which is awesome. I completely agree that that's just something not easy necessarily, because if you've never done it, 30 seconds can still seem like a really long time if you're just trying to concentrate on your breath, but it's accessible. Do you have any other similar practices that could be considered equally accessible for somebody trying to access a different state of consciousness or a different level of awareness?
Most certainly. And I'll also say, as you know, we give all of these practices away for free. You know, we have a community where the whole purpose of it is giving all these holistic practices, mindset practices, all different types of tools so that we can do this on a regular basis. But I want to give, there's one that stands kind of above everything else. And that's because it engages the sense of hearing and speaking. And the sound carries consciousness. Therefore, if we can engage the hearing capacity, it's going to be easier to actually control the mind. An example is we use an alarm clock to wake up, not an oil diffuser, because the sense of hearing is so, it carries consciousness. It grabs our attention. And examples of somebody's driving, if an ambulance crosses, somebody's listening to this podcast, they're going to have to consciously bring their attention from the sound of the ambulance back to our voices here, because sound pulls, it carries our consciousness away. So there's one practice that engages that sense, frankly, all senses, that according to all the ancient literatures from what's called the Veda, or all these ancient texts from India, which are some of the oldest written literatures in the world, they talk about mantra. Mantra literally means, man means the mind and tra means to deliver or to free. So mantras are these ancient sound vibrations that we say out loud of our mouth, but then our ear hears it. And what happens is, instead of just trying to grab the mind and hold it, good luck. You know, sometimes people mistakenly think meditation is you just empty your thoughts. Good luck. It's not going to happen. Mm. You know, the mind is active by nature. Rather, we engage the mind. And so there's mantras, and I mean, I'll give like one example that people can, you know, utilize if they so desire, but there's different mantras and we say them and we hear the sound vibration and it actually captures the mind. And ultimately these sounds are not just meant to calm the nervous system, capture the mind, but also they're resonant with the self. And what that means is it'll do all that stuff automatically, make you feel better, make you more focused, make you more discipline, but that's almost secondary to what it does, is that it helps us understand the self more, helps us actually uncover the true, what we call the self, the consciousness, spirit, the soul, etc. And so, you know, an age-old mantra that many people, I'm sure most people listening here, is Om, and there's various others as well. And what that looks like is, even if it's just one mantra or 10 or 108, whatever the case might be, is you chant these mantras out loud. And instead of, again, just trying to control the mind, good luck, what we do is give the mind something good to pay attention to. Just like if you have a child, it's going wild. Instead of saying, stop, oh, good luck, how's that going to work? You know, it's like, here's something to, you know, here's a bottle, here's a song, here's something to actually capture the attention. So sometimes we have to treat the mind like a baby. And so whether that's just getting comfortable, sitting in a seat, taking a couple deep breaths to start to gather their attention and just chanting, Om. And chanting, say that a few times or whatever the case might be, or other ancient great mantras like Hare Krishna, or I mean, there's many there. And we chant these mantras out loud, and it's the easiest form of meditation. What to speak of the most effective, as opposed to just, you know, sitting there trying to think of nothing. It ain't gonna work. So anyway, that's what I would advise, is people explore more about mantra, M-A. I mean, I wrote it in English, mantra, mantra meditation. I would explore that more, because what that will do is really give someone a positive taste to fall in love with meditation.
Thank you so much. Just hearing you chant, that was like immediately calmed my nervous system listening to you. So that's the power of, just to speak to the power of mantra.
I love it. Yeah, me too. I'm a big fan, believe it or not.
Yeah, no, I believe it. It's powerful. Yeah. And so do you want to just maybe briefly talk about, you've mentioned a couple of times already, but just to give a little of little bit of context to your transition, if I am correct, out of Ayurvedic practice, and now you're focused on the marketing that you're doing. But what did that look like, and how do those things, because I mean, you think Ayurvedic practitioner and marketer don't necessarily, just like kid from California and monk in India, don't necessarily go together. How have you made those things come together, and what does your life and your commitment to service to others look like now, coming out of all of the things that you would have experienced in your time as an Ayurvedic practitioner?
Yeah, I definitely, like I mentioned, never anticipated this be the direction, but it really just comes down to service. Like, how can I be of the most service? And so I've been an Ayurvedic practitioner, let's see, so 12 years now.
Wow.
12 years. And so 11 and a half, somewhere in that ballpark. And so for many years, really focused on just holistic healing and meditation. And the cool thing is, I still do that. Like, part of all of our practice is, like, we get people regulated and we get them actually taking care of their physical body and mental body as well. So it's certainly still there. But the reason I kind of transitioned to helping people, and just as we work together, all of our other people are similarly either doctors or holistic medicine practitioners and nutritionists. The reason I went in this direction was, in my Ayurvedic practice, I'm grateful to say we put a lot of time, energy, and diligence, and it became very successful. And what happened was, I was very happy, and I could have just probably done that for the rest of my life and never thought anything of it. But I had so many friends who are also in the holistic health and wellness space that, frankly, Ken, we were like, how the hell are you making money doing this? What's making good money doing this? And, you know, there's almost a cliche, like, spiritual, holistic folks, you know, make no money. And especially, you know, I didn't go and get some fancy degree, or I'm just like I'm a kid from California. It's like, well, how the hell are you doing this? And especially, just to give some context, the most money, like, I probably made from up until the age of about 22, 23, when I graduated the monastery, my whole entire life being like a lifeguard for a season or two and like helping my dad, like, I probably made a max of maybe $4,000 my whole life. Like, I never had money, and I came from a very, not poor, but like, we never had money growing up. So like, I knew nothing about money, nothing about anything. So to go from that to actually making what I'm grateful to say was really good money, everyone was like, how the hell did you do this? So I was like, all right, I got this great team that's already helped, you know, I built up, trained everyone how to do this, that, the other. All right, you know, I'll bring someone on. And I brought someone on, and we did it for them, and it worked so well. And then another person, hey, so one became two, became five. And then here we are today with over 300 people we've gotten to serve and help. And so it really just came to, how can I be of the most service? And so in Ayurveda, I can help one person at a time. I mean, many ultimately, but there's a cap of how many I can influence. Whereas now, each of our clients that we work with, if I help them, they're going to go each help 20, 30, 100, 500, 15,000, whatever that number might be. And therefore, my influence, using my services, using what I'm good at, is going to be so much more exponentially beneficial. Mm-hmm. So instead of helping people on an individual basis, now I get to help individuals go help so many people. So that's kind of how that evolution happened. And the cool thing is I know the space. You know, I know how to actually grow a holistic business and brand and all that jazz. And so anyway, even though it seems like, what? How does that make sense? That's how that natural evolution came to being. And I can honestly say I've never felt more purposeful and more satisfied in life. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And it is just a nice example and reminder that you can really merge, you know, the idea of holistic science and aspects of spiritual science with business and entrepreneurship and service to humanity in a really productive, powerful way where, you know, you just spoke to the idea of it being nice to influence a single life, but when you can influence many lives with that same amount of energy, I think that's what, in our own way, that energy of service that really kind of reverberates out far beyond what you can really contemplate with your mind, that when you tap into your dharma, which I believe is what you've done, is where you start to is projecting that energy out into the world. So I think you're a really cool, really unique example of that. And in my own experience working with you, as you mentioned, we've known each other for a couple of months, 2-3 months now. And I can say that your level of sincerity and authenticity and really the energy that you bring to just wanting to do good things and be, as you said, as of service and in service to me and my business, and I'm sure the other people that you're working with in building their businesses, there is something so true in that. Like, there's a truth and an alignment that I'm really glad I've been able to connect with, and I do value everything that you've helped me create up until this point and looking forward to what we're going to create going forward. But all of that is to say that I think part of why you're able to do that and why you're so good at it and why you've been able to do it for 300 other businesses at this point is because you have all of these experiences where you really are weaving elements of practicality and logic and implementation with spirituality and levels of consciousness and access to, you know, truths of reality that maybe we just don't even contemplate to put together or try and merge in a way where you can really produce something out into the world of value, of service, and you tap into your own dharma in doing that. So I think that you are an example of somebody who is doing that, and that in and of itself is inspiring and is something that I'm glad I've been able to connect with, and I'm glad that we've been able to work together up until now.
Oh, thank you so much. And it takes one to know one, I'll say. And, you know, I'm grateful to have such great teachers for, you know, whatever I'm able to do. It's certainly through the kindness of all that I've learned from those who've been so generous to me. And, you know, it's so refreshing to hear. I mean, you present these topics so eloquently, and I'm just so grateful to get to have these opportunities for us to connect and really talk about these transformational topics. It's such a breath of fresh air that podcasts like yours exist and give us this opportunity to go deep into these topics that frankly work. And so just know, Dr. Nirvani, I'm so grateful that we are connected and that we get to have these conversations. And the cool thing is we get to do it all over again. And very soon we're getting you out here to Southern California, so we'll have another podcast. It'll be great.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for the invitation. We'll have to line that up for sure the next time I'm down there. So, Madhu, is there anything else that you would like to share or any particular last words you'd like to impart before we wrap up and we allow you to move on and serve some more people within the holistic health realm?
Well, for up to me, I'd never end this, but for practical purposes, no problem. Yeah, what I would say is just for everyone listening, you're never alone, though it might feel like it at times. And if you're anything like me, sometimes it's easy to think, oh, how am I ever going to manage this? How can I get through this challenge? How can I overcome this? How can I manage? There's always support available. And I'm happy to be one of those many people in your lives to support in any way that we can. And that's why we create what's called the Conscious Success Community. It's just to give away. We give all of our teachings and knowledge and trainings and all that away for free for anyone who wants to take it and learn it and explore it deeper. So I'll share that link, and it might be in the show notes. Otherwise, anyone can send me a message on any platform. It's madhu.life, madhu.life. Find me on any platform, send me a message. But actually, I want to give them a special gift. Why don't we do this? If you send me the word, why don't we do superhuman? I like that. If you send me the word superhuman, then I'll know you're coming from this podcast. Not only will I give you access to our whole, all of our courses and all that for free, but there's one we're working on, which is specifically around like meditation practices, a new thing that we're developing. And I will give you guys access to that as well. But you got to send me the word superhuman so I know they come from this podcast.
That's amazing. Thank you. That is such a gift. And I will be probably the first one to shoot you a message with the word superhuman. Yeah, that's
it.
So kind.
Thank you again for this great, great opportunity to talk about these amazing practices. And yeah, really just thank you, Dr. Nirvani, for creating such a beautiful space for people to go deep into these transformational practices.
Well, you're welcome. But I really could not do this without amazing people to have these conversations with and to really share in the experience and the richness that you've already had in your life and you've brought to so many people as they try and, you know, grow their own influence and awareness around what their true purpose is and how they can actually live a life where that's imbued in everything that they do. And it's just so cool to see that coming from you and to watch you be a really amazing example of that and ultimately to be able to talk about it on a platform like this. So thank you so much for your time today, Madhu. So much appreciation for you and everything that you've done up until this point and the wisdom that you've acquired doing it and your openness and willingness to share that. So thank you so much.
Thank you.